Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Momo and Sana from Twice. They should be gay. I don't know if they are. I don't care if they are. But they should be. They're really adorable. They did like a live stream for like 3 hours where they did each other's makeup. They like basically recreated gay memes and then just danced, and it was adorable. So shout out to Sana and Momo from Twice. They should be gay.
All that matters is that you believe in it, right? Like,
I'm not sure if I do. I don't know if I'm that delusional. But one of them at least should be. One of them I think is kind of gay, but the other one I'm not really sure. But you know, whatever.
What up, Cabrona?
What's poppin', Chingona? What's goody?
Not much. I don't know. I've been kind of having a very unproductive week or so, where all I've done is play Among Us and watch the
good
news.
Good choice.
And watch the news. That's it. Just Among Us, watch the news, CNN, bam.
That second one might not be the most healthy way to spend your time. I finally watched Wong Kar-wai's Happy Together, and it broke my heart, and it hurted my feelings.
What is this on?
It's the Brooklyn, let me find it, Brooklyn,
like
it's called
some
BAM?
Separate, like, streaming
it's
site?
Like, no, it's like a museum. They're letting you watch like Wong Kar-wai's movies, Chungking Express, In the Mood for Love, and Happy Together. And it's bam.org. You can watch, you can rent the movies on there. They don't have them for sale anywhere because I was trying to buy them over Christmas for myself. But I finally was able to watch Happy Together and legally. And I recommend watching it for anybody out there who likes pain. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, same thing for what I'm covering today.
Oh shit. Yeah, that's that. Oh god. Yeah. But anyways.
So yesterday,
we'll get there.
I'm so curious. Like, we're about to talk about the inauguration. What if like shit just doesn't go as planned? Like, everything we're seeing is out of date. Like, cuz right now we're seeing like, for
we're
you
coming
guys,
from the past.
We think to yesterday, Biden and Kamala Harris were inaugurated. They are now in the White House or office or what, I don't know how the fuck that works. They're there. Trump's not. That's cool, I guess. Right? I don't
know. we're celebrating early in the hopes that it's true for
that
y'all in the future. that right now when y'all are hearing this, that everything's okay and everyone's safe. Hopefully. We'll see. I don't know, you know? Back to our regular.
I just realized why my mic sounds weird. Give me a second. Oh my god, my mic was freaking backwards. No wonder everything sounded weird.
Do you want to do it again?
Let me listen back to it.
I'm caffeined up.
Let me listen back to it real quick.
Okay.
Yeah. We don't record on tin cans. We're very fortunate in that way. Shout out to our Patreon donors.
We're super privileged. Like, just for the sound, y'all, I fly to LA so that the sound is good. That's why.
Yeah. God, this is why we haven't done interviews in so long, because doing it in person is just a different vibe. Like, can't believe we're going on a year interviewless.
Yeah, a year without an interview, and also because we don't sacrifice the sound quality. We try our hardest not to, so.
Not that it can't be done. I have recorded with people long distance, but typically they know how to do their sound, and I don't mind asking them, you know? Like, there are people who I would mind asking because I'd be, like, so embarrassed.
Yeah, you kind of don't want to put a lot of people through that, you know? Unless they're already in that space, you know?
Yeah, unless they know they can do it. They are, which now I bet a lot of people have become experts. I don't know.
Hell yeah, look at me with my ring light. Ooh, I'm a YouTuber, basically. No, I'm not. Fuck that. That's hard. But anyways, inauguration. Hopefully, we're all still alive, y'all. And we'll see. Are you hopeful? I don't know if I'm... I don't know how I feel.
I'm hopeful for, I guess, the other $1,400 of the stimulus.
Shit.
hopeful for more, really, but that's what I expect. That'll be nice.
Yeah.
I really have been thinking about getting a Nintendo Switch because I'm a gamer girl now, you know?
Among Us is on the Switch now.
Is it?
Yes. I have you. It on the Switch. It's like $5.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. Wait,
can you get it on the Lite version?
I think you can. Yeah. You can buy it through the God. Nintendo store.
I'm dead ass. Like,
we can play Mario Kart.
Fuck rent. I'm about to get that
shit. Rent? Fuck rent. Forever. that's a vibe. That's a vibe. Please get a Switch. That would be fun.
God, I would love to. It's so much fun, and I already play on my phone, so I feel like I don't need a whole fucking console. Like, I feel like I don't know.
Nah, that's gonna be badass. You need to do it. They're better, and you can get Animal Crossing.
Yeah,
you can start to understand.
Actually, I really want to get like The Legend of Zelda.
That fucking game is amazing on the Switch.
Breath of the Wild, yeah.
You might need. I don't know. I recommend getting the regular Switch for that one, because like. Playing that on a TV screen is insane.
Yeah, I do have a nice TV. Ooh, we'll see what I can get refurbished.
Yes, do it, dude.
Send me your Nintendo games that you don't play anymore that are just sitting there gathering dust. I know some of you guys have them. I'll pay for postage. Okay, moving on.
You're a gamer girl. I love it. Good stuff.
Who knew? I tried over the summer. I tried to be like an Xbox person. My friend Drew let me borrow his Xbox, and
you weren't.
I just couldn't stick with
too many buttons. Like
I think Nintendo is more my vibe.
Nintendo is a chill vibe. It's more like, I don't know. You play it and then you can stop. You know, you can just like, okay, I'm done. I'm done disconnecting from the world. I don't need to do this for 8 months, but I mean people do, so it's fine. That's no judgment.
For like for the social distance life that we're currently living, it's actually been really useful, because I'll get on Among Us and I'll play with my sister and I'll play with my nephew, who are both children and they live in Dallas. Like, how else do you connect with kids, right? Like from afar. So I've been playing with them and with other friends, and it's just been fucking awesome.
Dude, if you get Animal Crossing, you can go to people's islands. You can just, like, call each other on the app and talk to each other. That's how I became friends with Chris, one of our followers. She's my friend now. We just go to each other's islands and hang out, you know? We just talk forever about movies and hang out. See? Look at that.
What?
Yeah.
That's really cool.
CYC out here.
Yeah, uniting. I was pretty jealous during the Animal Crossing, like, craze or whatever.
The wave.
Yeah.
You gotta do it, but, dude. You can make a little person, you know, dress them up. Anyways, yeah, look, we've been inside a lot, okay? Been indoors a lot with my dog. So, anyways.
Yeah, we usually have so much banter, but there's just nothing going on. Like,
I literally nothing.
Haven't done much of anything. Like, functional production is coming up soon. And it's been delayed, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But I'm excited about that. I'm excited to, like, work on it in the many roles that I will be taking. So I'm pretty stoked for that. Look for Instagram stories that we'll be undoubtedly posting about this series that we fucking love. We've talked about 100 times, functional series. But it's going to be great.
Yeah, if y'all want to support, like, real Latinx-led and created shit, and that isn't, like, a Reba remake in 2020. Please.
I'm down for that shit, though.
Oh, Reba was amazing, though.
So good. She's just a mother who loves her kids, and she never stops.
Are you quoting the song? I love it. And then it was based out of Dallas. Like,
yeah,
DFW.
That was the most Dallas shit, dude.
Oh, I love that show. I love Reba. That look at our Texas coming out. We just love Reba. Who doesn't, though? Like, you're an op if you don't like Reba. It's like not liking Dolly Parton. There's something probably wrong with the other person. I just like her off vibes, you know? And plus she has lesbian rumors too. Like, shout out Dolly Parton. Oh,
wow.
She does. She should be gay too.
Vibes.
But yeah. Yeah, nothing else has really been happening. I've just been watching what you were going to cover and watching what I'm going to cover and being sad about it. All of it. Just really being in my feelings about it. Man.
Yeah. It's so funny because, like, last time we were talking about what you're going to cover, and I was like, don't knock it till you watch it. And now you're, like, stan number one.
I don't like it as much as Portrait, but it's like...
Oh no.
Never. Yeah, I obviously I'm never gonna get an ammonite tattoo, but oh my, thank you for telling me to watch that shit. I would have never watched it had you not been like, no, you didn't get your shit these right. Are like,
this is actually, I just realized, it's kind of the theme of this episode. Like, these are two things that we were both reluctant to watch, and then we're like, oh, fuck, okay, it was good, let's do it, whatever.
Pat had been telling me to watch what you're going to cover for, like, forever, and I was just
being
like...
being so ambiguous, let's just say it. I'm covering Veneno on that's on HBO.
Yes. And, of course, I'm covering Ammonite. Of course, I already said it, so it's two things we, yeah. Took us a long time to get to.
Yeah.
Did you binge watch Veneno? I have that question for you.
Yeah, I watched it all yesterday. Dude.
No, that's
you
the
know
worst.
I have the capacity for those things. I could watch like, the harshest, most like fucked up shit.
You're stronger than me because there's no way in hell I could watch that. Like I did watch it. I binge watched it in like a day and a half, and no.
That's a lot.
I needed like 8 hugs. I was like, I'm gonna go for a walk alone and listen to sad music and just like zone out. Like it was not. Good job for your mental health. I couldn't do it.
So do you want to go first? I think Ammonite came out first.
I think Ammonite did come out first. So whoo, y'all better thank Maitha that she told me to watch this shit, because I was literally believing everything Gen Z said about this movie, and I forget that they're dumb. So I love them, but they're dumb. Sometimes, and I don't blame them. Like they have a very good reason for not wanting to watch.
They have different standards too.
Yeah, I mean, our standards, of course, are like, you know, they don't know. They don't know how good they have it.
They don't understand the South of Nowhere times.
Oh my God, they don't understand watching the L Word when it was new and coming out. Like they could not. They can't fathom that feeling. That was it. Ammonite, I love you so much. I do, and before I get into anything, I understand the criticisms that come with it. It's valid. I do not want to see white lesbians do things anymore. And apparently there's another white lesbian movie coming out, and I think it might be tomorrow that it comes out, about, you know, white lesbians not of this century. And I get it. Like, I'm tired. I'm done. That's a very valid thing. I don't ever want to see, like, I'm good. But I mean, if you're gonna watch Kate Winslet in her second queer performance ever, you kind of I don't know, these women can act. They're incredibly talented, and this is an incredibly amazing director. Like, Frances Lee, like, directed God's Own Country, the one that I love that movie. I'm obsessed with God's Own Country. And combine that with Kate Winslet being fine still to this day, and of course Saoirse Ronan can act as well, and they're doing very interesting things in this movie. So let me get into it. Ammonite is based off of a female paleontologist from 1840. Her name is Mary Annings. She's the whole movie is actually, like, I think filmed straight out of Lyme, South England, where this lady actually lived. So he's kind of sticking to that correctly. She was a real historical figure, but she wasn't canonically queer. Pissed off a lot of people, actually, that they made her gay without, you know, there being a confirmation of it. And honestly, who gives a fuck?
Like, fuck you. Do you know how many of us have been, like, made out to be straight?
Exactly.
Shout out to Emily Dickinson.
Emily Dickinson is an... Oh, anyways, yeah, same shit. I'm tired of y'all straight-watching characters, so... Here we go. Let's make some gay that we don't know if they're gay or not. But this movie takes place in the 1840s. It's about Mary Anning's relationship to herself, to her environment, to other women, to her own mother. But it's really, really interesting. And I love this movie so, so fucking much. Like, okay, let me get into it. So
it's so surprising to hear you say that, because
I know. But again, we go back to, like, if you're gonna make some white shit, make it the whitest shit ever, right? And they did. They made this.
Make it right.
Make it right. Like, if you're gonna not include people of color, if you're gonna make some stupid white shit, make it the best stupid white shit. And unlike everyone else, I am like, I think I've always had a crush on Kate Winslet, and just seeing her now in this movie, in her second queer role. Her first one is called Heavenly Creatures. Peter Jackson directed that back in the day. It was her very first movie, and it's also based on historical queer women that murder people. But yeah, have you heard of it?
I've heard of it, but I didn't know that about it.
Yes, it's a true story based on two queer teenage girls that murder people and are in love with each other, right? So, and that was her first movie, and it was with Peter Jackson. So, Kate Winslet, I love you.
back to her roots.
Back to her roots. So, the entire movie is about Mary Annings being a paleontologist, and it opens up. I think what Francis Lee does very well in all of his movies is that he combines class and gender identity and what it means to be that gender in society. And he's mixed those two ideas very well by making both a love story and both a story about a woman trying to not find her career, but a woman in her career who is getting, you know, pushed to the side, as do all women to this day. So it's about Mary Annings. She's a paleontologist, and she sells fossils by the sea in Lyme, England. And what male paleontologists would do of that time is come buy her work and then put it in the museum and take credit for all of her work. And she found a fossil when she was like a little kid, and it's in the British Museum. And I think it's still there to this day. It's like a real thing that's happened. I don't know if they've actually changed it back to her name, though. That's a good thing that I didn't look up. But so it's about her selling these things she's a woman. She's selling these things. These men come in to buy it. And one day, this rusty-ass man, you know, white men don't get named here, but he brings in his wife, Charlotte, who's depressed, recently lost their child. And she's come out to the sea to get some water, to get some air.
She was prescribed sea air by the doctor. I love that. Love that for them.
Didn't you love that? Like, and she just so happens to be fucking terrified of water. So this is great. Like, she's terrified of something, and now they're gonna fucking throw her out to the sea without asking her. Charlotte and Mary have an interesting relationship at the very beginning of the movie, because they're definitely not, like, equals. They're definitely not even really speaking much to each other, and there's another thing to be said about the movies, that there isn't a lot of speaking, but once Mary decides to speak, it's meaningful. And I feel like a lot of the acting in this movie is about, you know, what us queer folk live off of is glances and hand touches and the things you can't really say. And Mary Annings is a very, like, stoic, closed off, emotionally, like, incapable of opening up. She's a very guarded human being. She's lost everyone in her life, all her brothers and sisters and her father, at a very early age. I think at 11 she lost her father, and then she's dealing with a mother who has lost all of these children. And so it's not a very happy place to be, and there hasn't been a lot of warmth extended to Mary Annings. So she is just kind of this stoic, strong character. And there's a lot of labor happening that she's doing, like hard labor with these rocks, you know? And Frances Lee is obsessed with hands. So, of course, half the movie is just like her doing things with her hands in like quiet silence, or with like the wind or the waves crashing. And yeah, that can get a little boring if you're looking for, like, I don't know, a fucking West Wing type of, like, movie. But there isn't a lot of talking going on in this movie. And I think I really fucking love that. What did you think about this, like, silence in the movie, that there wasn't a lot of words?
I'm not gonna lie. At first I was, like, really bored by it, mm-hmm. You know? Because you're just like, what's going on? Like, so much so that when, like, stuff really starts happening between them, you're almost, like, taken aback a bit. You know, you're like, what? Excuse me? Like, it's almost like one of those things, like, on Call Me By Your Name, where you need to have read the book to understand what the hell is going on in their minds.
Oh, whoa.
That's how I felt about it a bit. Obviously, like, the latter half really saved it for me. But, yeah, I didn't love the silence at the beginning as much as I love a sea breeze as much as the next person. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of well, what Francis Lee wanted to do is he definitely wanted to convey this cold, harsh, like, land, right? And he wanted to also have that kind of woman, you know, like someone who's not necessarily fitting into the societal norms of what a woman should be. So he said, fuck that. Like, if she's a female paleontologist who's not getting any credit for her work, and she's living in, like, semi, you know, she's not rich, even though she's actually an amazing, fantastic human being who's given a lot to the scientific community, she's actually kind of like the opposite of all these traditional female roles, right? She's the opposite. And Charlotte is kind of those things. She's rich, she's well-spoken, her dresses are completely different from Mary Anning's. Mary Anning's, like, old, and, like, she wears the same stuff out to sea every day, whereas Charlotte has, like, a different outfit, and her hands always look clean, and Mary's, there's always these zoom-ins of her hands at work, and they're dirty, and they look rough, they look tough, they look like they do things, and that's what he was trying to go for. And at the same time, I didn't feel like their relationship kind of came out of nowhere, but that's just because, like, I'm used to his style of directing, like, that's what he does. In God's Own Country, there wasn't a lot of words either, right? Like, it was a lot of, let's just glance at each other and see where that goes. But as a queer who's into quiet people, I was like, oh, wow, like, she just looked at her. Oh, I died. Like, did she just touch her hand? Like, wow. Like, oh, my gosh, she took off her shoes. This is wild. I probably would have done well back in the day or something. You know, I don't know. I felt like I picked up on all the same things. So Charlotte is kind of abandoned by her husband, and because Mary Anning's is getting paid by her husband, she takes her out on walks, she takes her out on her little fossil walks, and slowly but surely Charlotte begins to stop being depressed, and starts to grow within herself. She starts to find herself as a useful person, whereas with her husband, there isn't really anything you can do in a man's world. There weren't many men in this movie as well. And I think because of that separation, she was able to see herself in a woman's world, being useful, getting coal, getting dirty, things she would never have done back home in London as the super rich girl, right? She suddenly has to learn how to, I don't know, fucking roll around in some mud, get her hands dirty, and that starts to give her a lot of purpose. But first she does get sick, and this is when their whole relationship starts. When, again, another man besides her husband is coming in and saying, hey, I need you to take care of her because you're a woman. And Mary Anning's is kind of confused because of these things that are being imposed on her. And shout out to all the men. They were just like, device plots? What is it like?
Yeah, they're like just there to
move along the plot.
Like, be contrast with the women, and, like, yeah, absolutely useless characters. Can't remember a single one of their names. Don't even remember their faces. Who were they again? I don't know.
No idea. But the doctor pushes Mary Anning's relationship with Charlotte along, and she's forced to take care of her and to nurse her back to health. And
she's, like, literally sitting there, like, so you're a doctor and you can't fix her, but you want me to do it. Okay.
And she's like, fine. And he's like, because you're a woman, you're supposed to help your fellow sister.
So that's your job. She's like, I have a job. It's fucking rocks.
She's like, I'm a paleontologist. She's getting on her Ross shit. Friends reference. She's forced to take care of this woman, and you begin to see that not only are her hands used for labor, for work, for science, they're also used to heal and to give love to another human being, slowly but surely.
Men take notes.
The what now?
Men take notes.
Men take notes. You can contain those two at the same time. Kate Winslet did it perfectly. And there develops this very slow build between the two, but it starts, I think, when Mary Anning's character starts, like, tapping Charlotte's chest with some salve that she buys from her ex-girlfriend. Again, another thing. There's just,
oh yeah,
so
that was
much,
like, a
care.
Whole thing. I was like, oh, you guys just be living.
They do be then. Look, there was no, like, real shame when it came to, like,
yeah, there was no, like, let's fucking
hide this,
throw rocks at them in the street. Yeah, it was very much lacking in queer pain. I was like, oh,
yes. Yes, the limitations were not because they were queer. The limitations were more realistic. Like, you're a woman in 1840 England, so good luck to you. there's disease, there's all these other things. Good luck. If you survive, great. If you don't, we don't give a shit. But there was no queer pain, more as, like, the man who's controlling the woman. Like, these women living in a man's society, and how these women are trying to navigate that reality while at the same time trying to navigate the differences in their class, their socioeconomic level, their fucking education. Because Mary Anning's, although she doesn't have a lot of money, is incredibly smart and talented, and she's that bitch, and she doesn't have much to say. And Charlotte,
she doesn't want that life, right? She has no interest in it. That was what I really liked about it when it came to, like, the classism part of it. Mm-hmm. It was like, she's not out here trying to be your fucking secret handmaiden, whatever the fuck, from that one movie with Olivia Colman and
oh god, The Favorite.
Yeah, The Favorite. She's not trying to do that.
There was no power struggle.
She doesn't care about royalty. She's like, let me play with my rocks.
And you know, I'll get to that. That's at the end. But everything that happens between Charlotte and Mary Anning's feels like a slow step further. There's even a scene where they like touch hands, and oh my god, you should have seen Mary Anning. Kate Winslet's acting, like, it's so quiet here, and that's so hard to do because there's like nothing to go off of. It's just glances. It's just like the things they're not saying to each other. This unspoken tension and body language, which honestly I was really shocked by Saoirse Ronan's acting in this, because she wasn't Lady Bird at all.
No, she did that shit.
Like, there is something to be said about being able to quietly express, like, female sexual desire, and I feel like they were doing that shit without saying anything. Without, it was just like, let's go, I'm ready. Like, and it didn't feel out of nowhere for me. I felt like everything was earned. It was a slow step until that sex scene, which, oh my god, Kate Winslet, call me. Like, I'm free on Thursday. You can call me on Thursday when I'm free on Thursday.
If you could just call me about Thursday.
Oh my god, like, oh, I'm sorry. I turned into, like, 9-year-old Cynthia when I didn't know I was gay, but I knew. And I was just like, yo, Titanic. this beats Titanic for me. I didn't realize my crush.
You're forgiven for the whole door thing and letting Leo die. You're forgiven.
I always forgave her because I was like, girl, whatever. I don't care. I wouldn't. He cute or whatever, but not that cute. But anyways. But, like, wow, I did not expect that from Kate and Saoirse. That was, like, okay. Yeah,
I didn't either.
They did so good.
When I was watching it with my friend, they were, like, the first thing when the movie ended was, like, she said, a woman must have, like, given advice for that, because there's no way that a man, like, knew what was gonna happen, what should happen there.
Yeah.
Like, she definitely had, like, a guide. She had a consultant of the sapphic variety. Like, there's just no way.
I don't know, that was the scene where Saoirse did the gasp thing, and I was like, wait, this, okay, I ain't got nothing to say, but wow. And then, but Kate Winslet, she said something really funny when they asked her about it. She was like, well, it's definitely not like eating a sandwich. And then I was like, what? Like, she just... it's never been like eating a sandwich, but that just made me think about other things. But anyways, go off, Kate Winslet, not eating sandwiches. But anyways, that seems to be, like, what Francis Lee does well, is he centers their love story. And he centered it so beautifully, so naturally. But as soon as it begins, it ends, right? This is where we get spoilery. The whole thing's been spoilery, yeah. So.
No, I feel like this is... Because, you know, there's a certain amount that you gather from, like, watching the trailer, and that was what we just kind of described.
Mm-hmm.
But, now, like, yeah, from now on, spoilery, skip the next 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, Saoirse's character, Charlotte, goes back to England, and Mary Anning's life kind of starts to change very slowly. Her mother dies. She decides to go visit Charlotte in England, not just to see Charlotte, but of course, you know, there's her art, her work, everything, her life's work is over there. So why not go? And what happens is that Charlotte gets all U-Haul-y with her after they smashed a couple times.
But low-key, I mean, going into the scene, I don't know if you remember how you felt, but going into the scene where they see each other again for the first time, did you not have the expectation of, like, what we've seen time and time again of, like, oh, pretending nothing ever happened, oh, friend zone, gal pals, that shit, that's what I expected.
No.
And I got the complete opposite. Like, yes! My PTSD was, like, fucking...
This isn't
like,
real. Something this isn't happening.
Fucked up is about to happen. It's gonna be shitty. And instead, it was, like, the complete opposite. She was, like, move in with me. I got you a room. Let's go.
And not just
I'm married. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, and not just that. The fact that she kissed her in front of the housemaid made me, like...
It was very effective.
I, like, freaked out. I was like, no, what's gonna happen? She's gonna snitch. And she's like, nah, she ain't gonna say shit.
What's gonna happen to her? She's gonna get arrested.
And she's... And nothing. She's just like, don't mind her. That bitch sees everything. And I'm like, what else does she see?
She's like, don't. She's like, she's gonna have to get used to it. It's fine.
It's fine. And that was, like, another thing where I was like, this is revolutionary. Like... She doesn't give a fuck. They were, like, making out at sea in front of where anyone could have walked by. No fucks given. And that's just really beautiful and freeing, even for that, like, to see it, to see these two people who are queer not even think about it. They're not even, like, it's not even
they're
a
not
fear.
Even, like, yeah, they're like, I'm worried about cholera and disease. Like, I mean, I don't care about homophobia right now.
Yeah, I give a fuck about homophobia. I could die tomorrow. I don't care. And
I probably have 5 years left where life expectancy low as fuck right now.
Well, Marianne's character, I think, legit had like 5 years left. She died at like 45. So she only went to England once.
So she was like, my husband told me to get a hobby. Here she is.
Here she is. I'm gonna do this. But she like basically tried a U-Haul with old girl. And I mean, who wouldn't want a U-Haul with Kate Winslet after that? But you know, Kate Winslet's character, Mary Annings, is actually a very serious person who's dedicated to her work. And she declines. She says no. She said, had I known that you're going to try to, you know, treat me the way that, you know, the patriarchy has treated me, try to put me in a cage and lock me away just for yourself. Like, that's such a man thing to do. And she said, fuck that. I'm not, like, going to be your, like, pretty little doll that you get to put away. She's like, I am a full person with things that I love to do. And I thought that was really powerful. And at the very end, she finally sees her fucking work in a museum. Of course, it doesn't have her name, but she finally gets to see her work. And then it's like he's shot multiple endings and he stuck with this one. He shot a happy ending where they end up together, which honestly, that's kind of bullshit.
Is it mm-hmm. available for viewing?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I bought the movie and it didn't come with like any special ending. I read it in some article. I'll link it. At the very ending, you get to see this woman and her life's work, very real work in a museum. Across from her is her, you know, ex-girlfriend, I don't know. And it kind of all made sense to me. Like, I was like, whoa, like, epiphany, like, it's happening. Like, here is this woman who is living outside of these, like, rules, and she somehow both found love and purpose through these rocks, right? And I think that's, like, even though she didn't get the credit or anything, it somehow both brought her this woman who could capable of changing her life. But at the end of the day, she still chose the thing that she loved the most, which was herself. Like, it was really cool to me to see, like, two people love each other and let each other go because it was, like, the best thing that she could have done for herself, you know? She's like, why would I be, like, caged up for you when I could do this thing that I love until I die, you know? And, like, it was cool. Loving you is cool. But, like, I have found purpose within what I do. And I am strong enough to say I choose myself. And I thought that was really fucking cool at the end, that it was very vague. You don't know, but I'm pretty sure she didn't go back to homegirl to go live in her fucking house, like a doll, to be you know, stuck in these societal rules. She said, fuck that. I'm not living in your man's world. I'm living in mine. And I don't need no dudes in my world. You know, I don't depend on men. They don't fucking, I'm not married to one. I don't, you know, the only thing she depends on men for is to buy her rocks, right? So outside of that, she has very real freedom. Her mom's gone. She doesn't have to worry about dealing with that baggage. And then she also doesn't have to deal with someone who just wants to chain her up in the same way. So I thought that was very beautiful. And I love this movie. I love that she didn't pick, you know, the girl and they didn't end up together, because that wasn't like a real option for her. You know, she picked herself, and I thought that was beautiful. And I give this shit 5 fucking fossils, 5 panduses and 5 fossils. I love this movie. It was so good.
5 ammonites for you.
5 ammonites. Yes. What did you think?
Like I said, I was pretty bored by the beginning of it, but I feel like I'm just not made for that kind of movie.
Yeah, yeah.
But it really got saved for me, so I'm just gonna say like half a cafecito, like that's it, just to like
focus,
get you there, get you to where you need to go, and then you, when you get there, you're good. And then I was, like I said, I was very, very impressed by its avoidance of queer pain. Just remarkable. Good job.
Frances Lee does this. You know, in God's Own Country, there wasn't a lot of queer pain. It was more about being an immigrant and being poor, right? And this is what he does again with class. He talks about it in a very real way, and because they had so many differences there. And I just, she picked herself. Like, what a bad bitch. Like, Kate Winslet, so fine. Call me on Thursday. Anyways. But yeah, so now here we're going to talk about queer pain.
Yeah, so polar opposite.
Total opposite.
Let's talk about Veneno. It's a Spanish biographical, like, limited series from Spain, created by Javier Calvo and Javier Ambrosi. It originally aired in Spain on something called Atres Player, and it aired from March to October because the production was actually really heavily affected by COVID, and there was a big delay after the pilot aired. It's only like 8 episodes, so it shouldn't have run that long, right? But they finished around October, and then HBO picked it up. All the episodes are now streaming there as of like November. Okay, so before production, the creators kind of were receiving a lot of praise for this because they had chosen 3 transgender women to play Cristina, who is La Veneno, and that's, you know, throughout her life in the series. Like, 3 of them. Most fucking shows or movies won't even find one. Mm-hmm. But I did some light digging because I was curious about these guys, and I found out that the 2 Javis not only have worked together before, specifically on a musical that was kind of popular, but they are in a relationship, and they have been over a decade. They're together. Like, these 2 guys are a fucking power couple.
Wow.
And yeah, I guess their musical experience really must have did something, because the soundtrack to the series was amazing. They're also both actors, so they're like pretty boys. Just take a look at them. So the reason that they did this series is actually kind of reflected a bit in another one of the character's story, which is Valeria Vegas. They were both basically really huge fanboys of La Veneno. And in the series and in real life, Valeria Vegas was also a huge fan and wrote a memoir after becoming friends with Cristina or La Veneno, and they spent like a decade together, you know, writing the story and getting to know each other and struggling. So that's what the series is about. It's about Valeria and it's about Cristina and many stages of her life, and it's about how the memoir came to be. So along with, you also get to see Valeria's transformation from her youth to becoming the writer of this memoir. But mostly it's meant to be about Cristina's life and her eventual death. I don't think that's much of a spoiler.
No.
It's a real person, guys. So some people, including the creators, they describe the series as kind of being through Valeria's eyes. And I can see how that was the intention. We kind of hop around in time quite a bit. And we see La Veneno through the eyes of a journalist at first, who discovers her in her prime. Then we see Veneno through her own eyes as she talks about her childhood.
Oof.
And then finally, in present day, which is like at the beginning of the decade-long friendship or whatever, we see it through Valeria. So to me, I think you see it through a lot of perspectives. And at the beginning, I feel like it's kind of a bit difficult to follow because there are so many perspectives and we're not even sure who the protagonist is, what time period it is. Yep. We don't know because it's hopping around in time and in perspective. And I'm also kind of a distracted viewer, so I might have been playing Among Us a little bit. Eventually, you know who's who, you know when is when, and you know like how much Valeria has figured out about the life, and you know where the holes are that you need to fill. And at the end, all like they kind of say about the memoir that she's writing throughout the series, all the pieces will fall together and make a complete story. So I'm going to kind of just start with some of the things that I really loved about this series, which I've already mentioned, like the soundtrack. Seriously.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Bops. But mainly it was like the parallel between Christina and Valeria. And you get this very occasionally where they're literally like back to back, scene to scene, having these extreme parallels in their lives, whether in the future or in the present, whatever. Their experiences, as much as they're tied together, they're incredibly different because of when they experience them. And also maybe because of where they experience them and with who they experience them, you know? All these things, like, factored in. To kind of give more background on Levanino, she didn't have a supportive family or society around her, of course. Valeria, who, you know, her life wasn't without struggles. It definitely, there's so much of a struggle. But she was surrounded by people who stuck with her and helped her. And, you know, like, in comparison to what we see in Levanino's life, it's, like, much easier to watch. And you see these two women whose lives have complete opposite trajectories, right? One's going down or has already gone down, and then the other one is going up. And yet they're bound together until the very end. And then I also love, like, all the moments when people would look at Levanino in awe. They'd be like the very first scene of the series, for example, she's magical. She's like behind her is like car lights, but it looks like a stage light. It probably is a stage light in real life, but it's magnificent how they portray Levanino. I love those scenes. They were so fucking amazing, and I that's why the series was made, because of how people saw her that way. But there was also a lot that was really hard to watch, and a lot that I wish I could get a better perspective on, other than me and being a fully cis person. Like, because to me, it felt like a lot of it was trauma porn. Like,
yep.
It was heavy.
Yep.
Like, it's, look at this. Look at how they suffer. Look at how different they are. And, like, there was a lot of that all throughout the series. And I just didn't like when they were made spectacles of. It's hard to look at. It could be a part of the intention. It could also be, like, trying to draw the viewer in. I don't know. But a part of me wants to be understanding, because in real life, that is the perspective that a lot of people had of the real life Levanino. And I have to say, they also went really easy on, there's a storyline with a TV station that takes her on and that kind of like brings her into the spotlight. They make it seem like, oh, they saved her. They took her out of this life that she was living.
Mm.
But like, they were exploiting her. No matter what benefits she might have had for a moment in time, they exploited the shit out of her.
Her entire life.
Yeah. So a good way to kind of sum up that feeling was how there's this worker at the end of the series who works at a bookstore, and he says that he's like he's like a person that lived through that age or whatever, or that knew about Levanino. And he says that he always thought that she was a stereotype of a trans woman, whatever that means.
Yeah,
and
whatever that means.
That he realized through, like, this memoir that she was much more than that. And I think that's supposed to wrap up this series as, like, a thing of, like, look, Levanino was a person, you know, who went through these things and was so important and stuff. But it's, like, everyone still saw that spectacle. That's what people will like mostly remember, and that's what the series, I think, intended to fight, you know. But I'm like, how successful was it? I mean, to me, I think I was able to look past some of the bullshit, and I see, like, the good parts and all that stuff. But it's like, what, you know, your average viewer, what's the opinion there?
I don't know what they're like. Like those beginning episodes, I feel like are so perfect and warm and helpful for anyone. I think we needed that kind of like hug, but I just didn't realize it was gonna get so damn violent. Yeah, and
very gritty, very like
it felt like, you know, queer trauma porn. And at the beginning, it didn't feel that way, and I think maybe that's what drew me in, is that those very first episodes were very loving, and Valeria's story and how Valeria was forever changed by La Veneno, by Cristina, that was really kind of the only beautiful parts of the show to me, because after that, they start getting into, like, but see how they treat trans women, and I just kept feeling like it was this, it didn't necessarily feel like a universal story, just felt like Cristina's story, but the way they exploited her entire life, and then the way her family, that the family stuff really, really upset me, just because I know that in real life people don't actually get closure with their family or acceptance, and they seek it the rest of their lives, and it's super sad. But that prison episode didn't need it. We know.
Yeah, the whole, all the prison stuff, like, that was,
we didn't need a whole episode.
That was so much. Yeah, and
that was for straight cis white people who don't know anything about trans people. But
it's for people who want to, like, who needs to get that far into it?
We don't need to see it.
We have our imaginations. We understand.
We don't need to see it. And that was so violent to me. And that was so necessary.
Like, not to that extent. Because they just over and over and over, more and more scenes of abuse. It's like, why? We understood the first time.
They could have just cut it every time and not shown it every time. And yet they said, fuck you. I hate you. We're going to...
I don't know.
I don't know what kind of message that was, because it's like...
Are you at a stage in, like, your, like, cinema history where you have to, like, really set in that point? Is that where you're at? That's a bit something that obviously we need a better perspective on. But circling back to what you mentioned earlier about Valeria, her story kind of really saves this series, right? Because it's not just pain and trauma that you're seeing. Mm-hmm. Which I just want to mention, Valeria is played by Lola Rodriguez.
So fine.
And wow. I have a really fucking big crush on her.
You too?
Holy fuck.
Oh my God.
If you're listening to this, please at MightThatPanda on Twitter and Instagram.
I'm free on Thursday.
I'm free on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
For real, though, I was in love, dude. Like, I saw her and I was like, yo. Oh my God, call me.
Yeah, I got so mad when she got a boyfriend.
Oh, you too? Pissed. I was so upset that it was a man. I was like, and of course she's straight. This is some bullshit. Yeah. I want a refund.
So, Lola Rodriguez in real life is a trans woman as well. They also did right by that. And if you see the series, you'll understand that this role must have been so emotionally strenuous on her. But she still did it magnificently. Like, I'd watch her in anything.
Same.
Because this is, you know, having to take it back, right? Because this is over a span of 10 years. The transformation she makes is, like, impressive.
Wow.
And actually, I know you have thoughts about the ending. And I guess I kept waiting for the moment where I agreed with you about the ending. Mm-hmm. And it, to be honest, like, it never came. So I kind of want to... This might be... I'm trying to keep it spoiler-free, but here's a warning for you guys. The next 2 minutes might not be spoiler-free. So why did you hate the ending?
I just hated the ending because it felt too real. I was like, damn, like, I know that this part is made up, but it feels... I don't know. It felt lazy to me, the ending. Like, I get it. I get
the
it.
The fantasy part of it?
Yeah, I hated that
or
part.
Or the reality.
I hated
of
the
it.
Fantasy and the reality. I hated the ending. I hated how.
The whole thing.
I hated the whole thing. I hated her family. I never understood. I don't know why they were trying to make us sympathize with her family. I hated everyone in her family. I wanted them all to fall off a mountain. All of them in a group. I wanted to push them one by one. That's how much I hated everyone in her family. And I get it. She was a very difficult person to love sometimes, but at the same time, the bullshit they were doing right at the end, you know, I can't agree with it. I don't dig it. I don't dig people that just because of your family, you should put up with their trauma bullshit. No, thank you. She should have cut them off so soon. She should have said, fuck y'all forever. I hate y'all. Or just, you know, said, fuck y'all and moved on with her life. But the way that she held on to her entire family, that I want to throw off a cliff, all of them. No, I have no sympathy for her family. So it sounds
like an emotional thing.
It's very emotional. I hate her family.
You were angry with them, as you should have been. I interpreted the whole thing as, like, we're supposed to hate these people. I didn't so much ever feel the need to sympathize with any of them.
I just felt like it was really drawn out, too. Like, everything that they did towards the end, all the things they shown.
It was a very long fantasy scene. I don't know if I had a different reaction than you were, but I was literally crying for like 5 minutes.
I was so upset. I wanted to fight everything.
I was crying so hard because, mm-mm. You know, you're seeing Veneno react in this, like, you know, I don't know, like all she ever wanted was like to be loved, you know.
By them. And they suck.
Or everyone.
She was loved by her friends, her chosen family.
She was loved by a lot of people.
But she pushed them all to the side towards the end. I couldn't get with that. I was like, you're going to do your girls like that? The ones that really loved you? The ones that really took care of you? You're going to do your girls like that? I was like, really upset at Veneno at the end just because of how she did her homegirls that really loved her. Her family, her real family, the ones that loved her. I can't. It made me so upset. And the way that she just fell into the same pattern that I don't want to see women fall into ever. And I don't need to see the abuse. Honestly, I don't need to see women be abused by men to understand that they're being abused by men. That felt violent as well. Like, as per usual, women are getting, you know, hurt by men. And I don't need to see that shit. That's so fucking traumatizing. And that's another thing.
Very
that
difficult. Yeah.
I was like, why are they showing us this? We know the violence exists. It's very real. It's very traumatic. We don't need to see it. So it was just...
at the very least.
It was excessive.
Like the ratio.
It was excessive.
The ratio was so off.
Yeah.
Like... I don't know.
We never needed to see it.
Definitely had an issue with it. But anyways, as of now, it's kind of unclear if anything else is going to come from the series. It was meant to end, you know, and it was written as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
But it has been a big success, at least in our circles. So hopefully we get something else from this, you know, something better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think they should be telling... two cis men should not be telling the story of, like, women.
Yeah, see, that's where you start to run into issues. There should have been more beauty than suffering.
And those first episodes are beautiful, and then after that, oh dear God, here come the cis men, cis white men doing some shit they usually do. We're like, oh, let's show you the trauma, and I'm like, I know for sure there was so much beauty and love happening down in the Parque del Oeste with all those women that were sex workers. Like, there was so much beauty and love there. Of course, you know, there was some petty bullshit and some violence there because that's life, but there was a lot of beautiful things and a lot of community happening there in a very real way that
why did we spend more time in the prison than we did at like West Park?
That was like
Jesus.
And that's cis white dudes making shit when they should just let women make the shit, because and the whole thing was very violent towards women. I just, of course it's cis white dudes doing it, because I'm just like, can you actually get trans women to write and tell this story? Because I don't think they'd send her this bullshit, but go off.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was
also,
it was okay.
I went into this upset because all my Latinx friends were into it, and I thought that it would be like a Latinx thing.
Oh,
but no. Our colonizers have done it again.
Yes, they have.
Quit sending me Spanish shit to watch. I swear to God, I'm going to end up liking it, or at least a little bit, and I'm going to be mad about it.
Fine as Valeria.
Okay.
They tricked you. They tricked us with Finance Valeria.
They fucking tricked me.
They said, there's pretty girls.
They called
it
La Veneno. I don't know. I think it's worth watching, especially if you want to be like, you know, if just honestly, just for Lola Rodriguez, like, it's kind of worth it.
Yes.
Love her. Love her.
Oh, she's
so
beautiful.
That's what I've got to say. I guess no cafecito. I want to give it something just, you know, yeah.
Yeah, you have
to. You know, they get a whole cafecito. For the gratuitousness and the spectacle, and yeah, they get a whole one for that. But honestly, there was just so much goodness, and I love the characters quite a bit. So
yeah.
I would still tell people like to give it a watch.
Yeah, I wouldn't give it that low of a score, even though I'm very emotionally hurt by a lot of the things they did. That's just I need to go to therapy. so did Christina, frankly. Everybody on that motherfucking show. Mm-hmm. It needs to go to therapy. Just for the gratuitous violence, I give it four machetes.
Venenos.
Four venenos. Four machetes. What is it? It's not a machete. It's like a scythe? A Sith? What is it?
The little... from the Grim Reaper?
Yeah, that little tool that she had all with her all the time. Christina.
She did?
Yes! Remember that scene? God.
I never noticed.
With the Nazis? There were Nazis. There were Nazis. there was? Because, you know, fascism in Spain is a very real thing. So let's talk about it. They kind of did it, but that's fine. I've seen enough Pedro Almodovar movies to know what was going on. Yeah. But yeah.
I understand what the past was. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, the fascism in Spain was very real up until the 90s, or the late 80s, I think. So, yeah. And, you know, shout out to Veneno. I was looking at the actresses that played her. Oh, my God. My mouth, like, almost fell out of my face. Like, I was just like, Like, the first time they show Veneno on screen, and I was like, what? I'm watching all of this. And that's how they draw you in, and then they trick you. But whatever, it's fine. Mm-hmm. Four panulces.
All right, well, I hope you guys enjoyed that episode, because we're about to do some Patreon shout-outs. Last week, Fred Papita read my birth chart. It was interesting. So listen to that. And we're just going to do some shout-outs. Make sure to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, at CYC Podcast. Send us emails, buy our merch. All the links are in the bio. Or check out our extra episodes on patreon.com/CYC podcast. And yeah, let's get started.
Yo, Patreon, I love you. You are the best. I'm going to shout y'all out. Marisa, shout out to you. Savannah, shout out to you. Oh, Savannah with two N's. Okay. Luna, shout out to you. Valerie, shout out to you. Kikis, Michelle, Heather, Rosaura, what's good? Our brother, Vettel. Shout out to Chrissy. I hope you like this episode. We finally covered Ammonite. Aaron, I love you. Call me. Text me. Actually, you know what? I'm going to do that to you, and I'm going to get your address. Shout out to my baby mama Glow. I love you. Shout out to Erica. Shout out to Marimar. Hey, I love you. And shout out to Rasi. And if you haven't, and if you don't, you need to go listen to his podcast, Shit You Don't Care About. It's a course about shit you don't care about, but it's also about shit that's funny and great. And I love him. So shout out to all the Patreon people. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. So love you.
Also, shout out to our latest contributor, who you're not on a tier, and I like not any tier at all, period. And I think you should be on a tier so that you could listen to our stuff. But shout out to Maria, whoever you are, wherever you are in the world,
you're awesome.
Shout out also to Margarita, another new Patreon. Thank you for supporting at the producer level. Hit us up anytime. Also shout out to some of our my cafecito gangs, which is I believe Sandra, we have Favi, Latinos for Lunch. A few months left on that, so you guys better go jump on that train. Baby Dojo Negoro, I don't ever know if I'm saying that right. Shout out to you. Shout out to Sulema, Edith, and R, the mysterious R. Shout out to Mari, who just came back from Texas, and I'm very excited to see her puppy.
No.
Shout out to Mireya, who's a long-standing like Patreon supporter and has all the cool Cafecito merch. And Noelle, of course,
we love you, Noelle.
Don't she's been doing like reviews on books on TikTok, and that's pretty cool. And then shout out to Alicia. It's like probably one of our longest running Patreon donators is probably Alicia from Australia.
Yo.
Who listens to us while we're sleeping. And that comforts me. That brings me comfort
while you were sleeping. How romantic. Sandra Bullock, okay, go off. No, I really like that movie, sorry.
All right, guys, well, thank you for listening, and I hope you had a good inauguration.
Please stay safe. Lock your doors.
Yes. Bye.